Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, and if you're just joining us, this hour we are listening to stories from The Trapdoor Comes Out. The event was a celebration of Pride Month, and the next speaker we are going to hear from is Amber Kessler-Freer. This is not her first time speaking at a Trapdoor event. She's spoken at a Story Slam in the past. But for Freer, The Trapdoor Comes Out was her own coming out.
Hello, everyone. It is great to be back on the stage. This time with a little bit more planning. I'll just get right into it. I am panromantic demisexual. And that is the first time I have said that in front of a group of strangers. So this is my coming out story. It's happening right now in front of you beautiful people of Fort Wayne. It's so good. I grew up as a missionary kid, very conservative Christian culture, and that in that culture, discussions of sexuality were essentially, don't do sex stuff until you're married to a man. And then, when you get married to that man, you better do that sex stuff and like it whenever that man wants. So that's what I grew up with. And, you know, this purity culture kind of made a good cover for someone who was on the asexual spectrum. So I just adapted to that culture. I was really into it. I did what was expected of me. I got married to another missionary kid at 20 years old. And several years into that marriage, I still found the sex part of it was just kind of awful for me. I did not enjoy it that much. There were a lot of expectations that I didn't feel I was meeting, and I kind of hated it. And it took me a while to even come out to myself because I wanted to, you know, maybe it was an attitude problem that I just needed to fix. And eventually I got to the point where I thought maybe I just don't fit into this mold that I've been trying to fit into my whole life. Maybe there's something going on that I've just repressed. So at this point, I start doing online research, always in incognito mode, and always deleting my browser history after every research session, because, you know, I was married. I'd been married for several years. I had a lot to lose. Like, if this was actually my orientation that was the issue, or if it was something that could be resolved, I wanted to know for sure, and I didn't want anyone else knowing that I had these doubts until I had it all figured out. And it kind of took me a while because I did not feel that I fit in any particular place. I knew about the Kinsey scale. So you've got the Kinsey scale, you've got a 1 is someone who is 100% exclusively attracted to the opposite sex, and a 6 is someone who is 100% exclusively attracted to the same gender. And I figured, like, okay, I'm kind of like maybe a 4, I don't know, 3, 4, I'm not sure, because that scale didn't address the difference in desire. Like, even if I felt that I was sort of drawn to someone or like attracted to someone, I wasn't really that interested in doing the sex part of things. And so I didn't feel like I really fit that either until I found the red-purple scale. If y'all don't know about this, you should look it up because it's amazing and it blew my mind. But it basically takes the Kinsey scale on the x-axis and it adds a y-axis of like the intensity of sexual attraction or desire. And so at the top, you've got people who are like hypersexual. It's all about sex. Like every relationship is about the sex. And then you've got asexual people who are like, I could care less about the sex. Like, maybe even it's repulsive to me. And that kind of gave me a visual representation of a range. And I could say, okay, there's like this box sort of in the middle, like a little bit above the very bottom, but like in the middle. Okay, that's me. Like, that feels right. That feels like me. Which was great. It gave me another search word that I could use, asexuality. So I found AVEN, which is the Asexual Visibility and Education Network. And I was digging deep into the AVEN forums and learning all this new vocabulary to kind of describe who I was. I was on the asexual spectrum, gray ace, panromantic, demisexual. It was all very exciting and empowering because it was the first time I had seen my particular brand of queerness reflected in other people's experiences. But it was also terrifying because that meant I had to tell my husband. Now that I had finally like figured out what was going on with me. And so I did. He was the first person that I came out to. And that was in 2015. And we decided to end our 8-year-old marriage in 2016. And it was incredibly painful. I had been hoping we would sort of figure out some sort of arrangement, but that wasn't meant to be. And honestly, that was really the most loving decision that we could have made for each other. I actually invited him to this. He's in London now, so he couldn't make it, but he was part of that journey, and I learned a lot about true grace going through that experience with him. So all of this was happening when I was living in Chicago, and I came out to some of my friends in Chicago. I was into theater stuff, so it was, you know, a very open and affirming community. It was safe. I had what I call the open closet door policy, which was I was in the closet, but the door was open, so like if it came up in conversation or if it seemed natural and safe, then I would, you know, tell people. But I was definitely still in the closet. And I actually started dating a guy who lived in the Fort Wayne area. I went to Huntington University, so I had a lot of friends that were in this area, and he was a friend from back in those days. We started dating, and I kind of leaned into this straight passing relationship. It was kind of like my last shot at doing the whole like heteronormative family thing. And so I was like really into it. I really loved this guy. And so I decided to move to Fort Wayne from Chicago for this guy. And 8 days after I moved, he dumped me. That was a really fetish thing to do. But I will say, I am like so grateful that it happened. And you know, I don't know if he'll ever hear this. He's blocked me on social media, whatever. That's his deal. But I wanna say, I'm grateful that he did that because it gave me this wonderful opportunity to be in a new place, be meeting new people, and I can be authentic. I can start to be out. I came out to my immediate family last month and one of my cousins. So considering I'm not out to my social media world or extended family, I wasn't sure if I was gonna do this. I sent my proposal to Trapdoor and I was like, so what do you think about if I was like telling my story as it was happening. If I like came out as I was telling the story about coming out. And I told them that I would probably wrap up my story with a not so tidy ending the way that I did in my January wine-fueled slam, where I said, it gets better. And you know, that is a slogan that is used to encourage LGBTQIA plus youth, that it gets better. It really, really sucks right now, but it gets better. And coming out to you all tonight, it feels right, it feels true, and it feels better. Thank you.
The Trapdoor Comes Out continues, and a reminder that all of the stories you've heard during our show can be found at WBOI.org. The next storyteller we are about to hear is Julia Carter.
Thank you, guys. So my story starts when I'm this awkward 8-year-old who grew up in Columbia City. So it's already a pretty small town. Woohoo! Fellow Columbia City. Go Eagles. and I grew up in a trailer park that was mostly retirees and some single dads, and they're like, kids were only out there on weekends, and I was an only child, so like I grew up mostly hanging out with adults. And thankfully, though, I had one friend who was out there fairly regularly. She was with her dad on weekends and on Wednesday nights, and usually spent 88% of that time with me, so I feel like I owe her dad an apology. And one night we were playing house in her bedroom, listening to NSYNC, because this is the 90s, and I was probably wearing wind pants, like, yeah, height of fashion. And we were playing house, and I was the guy, because I was always I always ended up being the guy, because I was tall and broad, and so somehow I just was never picked to be the girl. So I was the husband, she was the wife, we were dancing to NSYNC, because, yes, bye, 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 right? Like, that's a love song. And so I'm looking at her, and I'm like, she is really pretty. I'm out of my league. Like, I'm not that pretty. And then I'm like, I should kiss her right now. Because I'm the husband. That's what husbands do, right? But I don't, because that'd be weird. Instead, I go, my mom's calling for me. I gotta go. And I sprint out the door, scream the entire way home, bolt into my bedroom, throw the door shut, and immediately start writing my diary. Oh my God, I almost kissed a girl. I'm a Christian. We're not allowed to kiss girls. I was raised by a father who was Christian and a mom who was kind of new age until her mom died when I was 6, almost 7, and we started going to church with my dad. My mom fell really deep into this religion because it gave her comfort. And so we were in church on Sundays and Wednesdays and Sunday evenings and 4 or 5 other times a month. Like, church became our thing. Like, yay, go us. And I became like the super evangelical kid. Like, and asked my parents if I could go to our church's school in 7th grade, not knowing what I was getting myself into. If there's any School of Tomorrow survivors in the audience, I'm with you. It sucks. And so I went to my church's school, and it was all this curriculum about how girls are supposed to be subservient to men, and, you know, all we're meant to be is housewives, and you have to wear dresses and be pretty. And I was like, oh, that. I want to ride my bike. I'm not going to wear dresses because I'll get caught in the chain. I'm wearing my jeans. Screw all this. What I signed myself up for. And of course, now I'm in church 6-7 days a week. And then I turned 14, and my parents hit a rough patch in their marriage. And my dad had always been pretty abusive towards me, but he really became abusive towards my mom at this point. And things happened, and they separated for a short while towards the end of my eighth grade year. And of course, my pastor was like, that's your mom's fault. She should have been a better wife. And I was like, fuck you. I'm leaving this. Screw you. I'm out. And then my mom got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And things got really twisted. At 14, I became her caregiver. If she wasn't happy, it was on me, and I had to fix it, because I was the only child. She had miscarried twice before I was born. So now all her hopes are resting on these shoulders. And at 14, that's a lot. You throw on top of that, I'm gay and I can't come out, because if I come out, I will literally get ish beat out of me. It was a lot. So I turned very inward at the time, and 2 years later, I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and then bipolar disorder, like my mom. And so I thought, oh great, now I can never come out. Because if I come out, it's gonna be, she's crazy, that's why she's gay. And that terrified me. I didn't want them to blame it on something. I didn't want it to be something that needed a blame placed. So I kept having these crushes on girls, and this is the age of MySpace. So I'm dating girls on MySpace. My first girlfriend lived in California, and I'm this kid in Columbia City, Indiana, right? Like, you know, marriage material right there, right? Best relationships formed over MySpace. And she broke my heart. By the time I was 17, she had ripped my heart to shreds. But we moved on, and then I found Tumblr, and Tumblr's great for dating. Yes. So we move on, and I'm still in the closet. My best friend knows. My cousin, who I'm really close with, knows, who hated the girlfriend that I had at the time, and, well, she was just out crazy and lived in California, so whatever. But then I get into my 20s. I fall in love with this girl that I met on Tumblr. And we've been friends for quite a few years before that relationship took its turn. And so I'm 22, and I'm still living at home, and my mom gets diagnosed with cancer. She gets diagnosed with stage 4 cholangiocarcinoma, which is a really rare form of bile duct cancer. And the bottom of my world falls out. Because my dad being an abusive psychiatrist, it was my mom and I against the world. And because we were both mentally ill, we understood each other really well. And so she was my best friend. And so it's December of 2014, or no, January of 2014. And we're sitting in the oncology hospital at Parkview Regional Medical Center. Snowed in. Because that's the winter, we all had snow like right up here, right? Like, and her chemo had been canceled due to a scheduling error. And mom looks at me, like we're sitting there, we're waiting on a ride to get home because our van, the brakes went out on it. And so she looks at me over her Us Weekly that she was really into. You know, Brad and Angelina and Jennifer, that whole drama was very captivating. And she goes, in the event that I die, I don't want you to have any regrets that you didn't tell me something important. And I'm like, all right, cool. Where are we going with this? We're having this conversation in the oncology hospital. Like, you realize our setting, yeah? And she looks at me, and I'm shaking like a leaf already, not sure where we're going with this conversation. And she goes, are you gay? Like, just plain as day. Really calm, really nonchalant. And I'm sitting there thinking, all right, my mom loves me, but she's also this kind of fundamentalist Christian. What answer is not getting me tossed out in the snowstorm? And so I think probably, it felt like years I was standing there, right? But it was probably 30 seconds or so before I was finally like, yeah. And my mom, bless her heart, looks at me and goes, it's okay. I love you anyway, I'll adjust. That's on me. And I literally stood there and I was like, this was the reaction I wasn't expecting. I sat in the closet for how long now, and you're fine with this? Like, I could have told you years ago and we would have been cool. And also I was like, but we're not bringing this up ever again. This conversation's over. We're not talking about my sex life. We're not talking about anything. Like, you're gonna shut up about it now, right? Because it's my story and I wanna tell it. And mom was like, yeah, okay, we won't bring it up again. We go home that night and I was sleeping on our living room couch because heat didn't reach my bedroom. And so 5 o'clock in the morning rolls around and my mom comes out and she shakes my shoulder until I wake up. And I'm looking at her and she goes, I made a list, or I stayed up all night going through your social media, all your Facebook, your Instagram, Tumblr, MySpace, you name it, she had found it. I was like, oh, shit. And she goes, I made a list of these 5 girls. Which one of them are you dating? And yeah, she was right. The girl that I was madly in love with was right there. And so eventually my mom did pass away, and I broke up with the girl that I was madly in love with because alcohol is a bitch sometimes. But it gave me the confidence to start telling other people because my mom still loved me and she was my best friend and the most important person in my life still loved me after I came out, then it was going to be okay. So guys, happy Pride. It's gonna be okay. If you can get one person on your side, be it your mom, your best friend, or one of us here tonight, you're gonna be fine, I promise.
The Trapdoor Comes Out will continue after a short break. Stay tuned.